Hello, everybody. It's another awesome Friday here for us at HISA. It's a very interesting bit. Remember earlier this week, we actually opened up HISA, the internal beta testing, to a few more guys, a very important and interesting step to, you know, giving guys access to various markets, both locally and also globally for investors. So in case you're part of that early testers for HISA, do not worry. And in case you are not part of it, that update is definitely coming to you very soon. Today, we once again bring you guys another awesome session as we get through various markets, as we get through various techs and developments that are happening across various spaces within the African continent, the world, and also space. My name is Felix Ucheng, and this is WeCurious. Joining me is
Ali Mwakaneno, your usual host, and a couple of amazing things happening this week. First of all, Apple's a virtual driver's license. Not that I have any Apple device or a driver's license, but I'm excited on behalf of those who do. And, you know, it's another step towards more secure and virtually, what's the word, democratic documents. And I'm really, really excited for that. Felix, what tickles you funny this week?
Well, I think for me, the first thing is that we've seen a lot that has really happened in various equity markets. On the tech space, I think nothing really, still looking a lot of data from the East, and we're seeing a lot that's coming in because we saw earlier today, Chinese, that is the semiconductor manufacturer, SMIC, actually say that they would be investing an $8.87 billion new plant in Shanghai. So we're seeing a global shortage in chips, and looks like, oh guys, chips in terms of microchips that are used for tech.
Not fries.
Yeah, not fries. It's very interesting that we're seeing this really increasing. And the demand, I don't know what happened to the one that President Uhuru Kenyatta launched the other day in, was it at Dedan Kimathi University? I think so. I won't say much onto it. But I think that's one thing that really, really, really came in for me. And then also one important thing that happened in the tech space was that Samsung actually said that your smart TV, they can shut it off if stolen permanently.
But they did that to the ones that were stolen in South Africa. You know that, right?
Yeah.
I found that really cool.
Oh, no, it wasn't.
I mean, come to think of it.
Like Ali, you saw how those guys were struggling to fit a TV inside the car. And here you are, you've struggled all that, you've gone through. The guys who you carried your TV and somebody picks it from your head.
I mean, right? I think, what got you locally, man? Before I...
Locally, I think, Ali, what's really standing out, I won't say it's locally, but it's regional, is Safaricom is ready. All boots on ground in Ethiopia. And they're going all guns blazing.
I feel like, I don't know. I guess it's just, for me, that wasn't the big news here. It just felt like another update, like, oh, guys, yeah, oh. We were, come on. It felt like any other update, like, okay, guys, so remember we told you we were going to Ethiopia? Good.
Yeah.
So very soon we'll be hiring for 50 graduates and you know. However, what we have, I don't know, thing is, this is not confirmed, guys. And again, that's the important qualifier here. This is unconfirmed, but then we had word on the street that actually NCBA might or could be partnering with Safaricom to further lending there. I thought that would be pretty exciting. For me, it was...
It's actually confirmed, Ali.
It's confirmed.
Yes, NCBA and Safaricom are partnering to support Mshwari customers. So guys, the guys who've been making you broke are partnering to ensure that you go broke again. So pretty much interesting. They call it Pamoja na Mshwari. In case you're probably wondering, guys, for a very long time, if you've never known, your M-Pesa accounts are usually held at NCBA. So that's new intel. If you never, the tech side, the banking side of all this is really going to NCBA, and that's one thing I know that's very interesting. In case you're wondering how this is likely going to happen, NCBA and Safaricom are actually saying that they would be looking on having a two-key campaign for both the two companies. And the first thing is that they're saying that customers who save on Mshwari will get an opportunity to access up to 6% interest on the lock savings account.
Mm-hmm.
So remember, what has usually been the norm is if you've invested in a lock savings account and you want to exit before maturity, then at most of the time, the interest... Okay, I haven't seen, but personally for me, I think the last time I did that savings on lock savings back then, you were not refunded the interest that has been earned.
Yeah, I still use the service, and I can confirm that if you withdraw prematurely, you just get your principal.
Okay. So guys, please... okay, now I think NCB is giving guys an opportunity where if you're having challenges, then they'll definitely be able to come in on board and give you up to 6%. I feel like that's quite a rip-off, man. 6%? Okay. Better something than nothing, but 6% is pretty much very low, in my opinion. And then also the second thing is that customers that have previously delayed in repaying borrowed amounts will have their limits reinstated. Guys, if you delayed in that Mshwari loan and you pay it right now, guys,
your limit
is going to go back up the same level where it's going to be. And your CRB report is definitely going to be posted. It's going to be updated as well. So pretty much interesting. If you've defaulted onto that, probably that's something that I know we might be looking onto, Ali. I don't know how about you, because we've seen a lot of data really coming from Central Bank with guys who are defaulting on their loans, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think for me, something else that I'm looking at is, of course, the window on the regulation of medical bills. Medical fees, and actually how that will affect medical bills. You know, if you're any Kenyan like me, you know that most of the people we know are one huge medical emergency away from being broke. So I thought especially some of the tenets of the bill, like banning hospitals from demanding upfront deposits for emergency services, could be a game changer. But then again, we'll get to the flesh of that as the podcast continues. Felix, something that really, really also had my attention from a regional point of view is what's happening in Tanzania. And Tanzania cut the 30% levy for mobile money, and I thought that was a really good move.
Big balls for Suluhu, I'd say. Interesting bit to see.
Interesting statement to say also.
Suluhu is giving a lot of solutions to Tanzania, and starting from earlier when she got into power, and there were a lot of tax levies as well that, you know, she came in.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're seeing that, and even leave that alone. Yesterday there was news that the president had actually allowed that, had brought in a filming crew to actually give guys the culture, you know, shoot a movie about the culture of Tanzania.
Oh, wow.
We've seen a lot of challenges happen in Kenya. I don't know if you heard about this, but when the guys wanted to film, I don't know the name of the movie, but the guys wanted to shoot a movie, and then they were given the bill so high for a scene that actually happened in Kenya, and they were shooting it outside Kenya. Can you imagine? They went and shot the scene in South Africa.
What?
Yeah.
I mean,
I think it was the movie about Queen Elizabeth, where she got her whatever. She lost her dad and she was here in Kenya.
Mm-hmm.
And they actually had to do this in South Africa. So pretty much interesting, because you want to play a scene just right where it was, and you have to go in and put it somewhere because the bills are pretty much expensive. So we're really hoping that that is something that is really going to lift in South Tanzania. Still a long bit for Tanzania, but I think they are in the right direction.
Yeah. Felix, I think we can get to the flesh of the discussion.
Oh, and then Ali, just one thing.
Yes.
I know you probably had this in mind, but we need to talk about Jumbo Jet as well.
Oh, yeah. Jumbo Jet.
Yeah, Jumbo
Jet. What's happening there?
Jumbo Jet finally confirmed Karanja Ndegwa as CEO. This guy has been in acting position from April 2020. Can you imagine?
I guess they were just checking if he's acting right.
I think one of the things that we've had that has actually been a challenge is we've seen most companies locally really take time in getting acting CEOs. Because even right now, you remember, even before Ben Gugi, that's the the former CEO for Kenya Power, before he took over, Jared Othieno was in that acting position for quite a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
I think about 1.5 years when he was there. And then we've also seen the same in Scan Group. Scan Group is still looking for a CEO. So the company still doesn't really have an official CEO. So pretty much of a challenge as well. And even right now we have, what's her name? Rosemary, the acting chair for KPLC.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and we also, Safaricom really takes some time before they brought in Peter Ndegwa. I think MJ was the acting CEO from May when Bob Colimo passed away. It was actually on 1st of July. And he took over all the way until April. But at least they confirmed Peter Ndegwa way earlier.
Yeah, they did. I think he was just waiting for that time lapse, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think, Felix, ready to start the discussion and maybe get into the flesh of things. For the sake of your excitement, Felix, Safaricom in Ethiopia, please.
Okay, guys. Now, in case you're wondering what's really happening, this is the flesh of today's discussion. Safaricom, the largest company in East and Central Africa by market capitalization.
By far.
Yes, by far.
Actually, the market cap for the Safaricom tops the total market cap of the other 9 companies below it. It's obscene.
Ali, Safaricom is literally 60% of the market cap for NSE. But looking at it from an East and Central Africa perspective,
God, it's a
then
giant.
It's 9 companies. So, anyway, guys, in case you're wondering, yeah, that's really going to happen. So, Safaricom has announced that it's beginning a massive headhunt or staff recruitment for Ethiopia. And so the company has said that they're going to take at least 150 diverse graduates. So they're not going to take a select number of people from a certain area, just so that they have a diverse ecosystem within the company. They're going to have a lot of guys, about 150 for the first over the next 3 years. Pretty much small, but for a company that's really picking up 150 is really a big number. But also remember that one of the things that Safaricom is really doing is always, if you've seen on what Safaricom really does over time, is the main goal has really been to touch lives, you know.
Mm-hmm.
When they support one person, what services is this person going to give that is likely going to support 3 or 4 other guys out there? And I think that's a very good strategy that probably we're seeing Peter Ndegwa is actually moving in. So in case you're wondering, guys, Safaricom Telecommunications Ethiopia PLC is now having boots on ground. And remember, in case you're wondering, when earlier this year, Safaricom had actually been granted a license of operating after the company had successfully bid for a telecommunications license in a joint consortium with other companies like Vodafone, Sumitomo, is it Sumitomo? What's the name of that Japanese company? Yeah. Whatever, CDC Group, and which other company was in that group? Man?
I can't remember, but they were, yeah. I think, around 6.
Yeah. Okay, so yeah, they were in a consortium. They went into Ethiopia, and yes, they got into that. And Safaricom, about 2 months ago, Safaricom picked Ethiopian Anwar Sousa, to actually, who was the managing director for Airtel DRC to, was it Vodafone or Airtel? Yeah, whichever. To come in and pick the managing director's post for Safaricom Ethiopia. And now they're here, they're picking up a recruitment drive, and which after that they'll be able to, you know, put more effort in terms of innovation and digital solutions so that the company can be able to fulfill its mandate the same way it does so locally. Is the same way they hope to do so in Ethiopia. And that's going to be a very interesting point. I know we're going to see a lot of data, mostly from the bit of infrastructure, the capital spending for the company. That's one thing that we'll actually be looking at. We're just definitely going to be looking at the financials for the company once that actually comes in public. And we're hoping that comes in as another, you know, bigger or larger revenue source for the company. It doesn't turn out as a bad investment, as a lot of guys have feared, including myself here.
Do you earlier I remember, Felix, something that we talked about was the developments in Ethiopia. This is specifically looking at the conflict with in the Tigray region. Is there anything that has changed so far, Felix?
civilians have joined the army. Yeah, but also I know, I think for now, Ali, literally, there's very little news to know about Ethiopia.
Mm-hmm.
Mostly because considering that Ethiopia is literally acting as, not really acting, but we can actually assume that Ethiopia is turning to somewhat China of Kenya. Oh, China of Africa.
China of Kenya.
Guys, come on. China has really, really done a lot in terms of our projects, and we are debt-ridden to them. So literally having that as a thought. But I think one of the things that is really coming out for us here is that there's a lot in terms of, and I think on May 17th, there was a little bit of restrictions on social media,
mm-hmm.
and also a little bit of data for, a little bit lesser data because some international media left Ethiopia as well. And so literally, I think we are sort of dark in the northern region right now. But also one thing that guys really have to know is that the war or the challenges that is really happening in Ethiopia right now, I wouldn't say, I think the area, the northern region is a very strategic point. And this is one thing that guys really don't understand, is because the northern region of Ethiopia, the area around Mekele, is it Mekele or Mekele? Okay, they call it Mekele. Is one of those areas that, you know, it literally links Djibouti and Ethiopia.
Right.
And remember that Ethiopia relies heavily on the port of Djibouti. So these guys have gotten into a point where it's a challenge to actually transport goods into mainland Ethiopia. And in case you're wondering, guys, Ethiopia is landlocked. So they do not have any, they only have River Nile, which right now they're also having a lot of issues with the Egyptian government. So because of the Nile Dam project, which they're working on, and Egypt has told guys that, you know what, if you let Ethiopia build their dam, we won't have any water coming up to us. Or is it flowing up or flowing down? Depends on geography, guys.
I mean, I feel like if you look at the, if you literally look at the map of Africa, it looks like it's flowing up.
It's flowing up.
But I'm not so sure. I don't think the altitude works like that. I don't know. I stopped reading geography after high school.
Yeah, but I think, Ali, it's really a concern. I think I agree with you. It's been short of a year, about 10 months since the war in the violence, because they're not calling it war. They're saying civil disobedience. That's how the PM, Abiy Ahmed, is saying, is that it's literally a small violence issue in the northern area by the Tigray People Liberation Front, that's TPLF, becoming a little bit of a challenge because it's close to 1 year and still we're seeing that as a little bit of a challenge. But I think it's also good because we've seen a lot of countries really bring in a bit of a bit of concern. And yesterday, I think our Minister for Defense, that's Kenya's Minister for Defense, that's Rachel Omamo, was in Ethiopia and said that they would look for diplomacy ways between the ongoing conflict in the Tigray region.
Felix, away from Ethiopia.
So we're really hoping that things will be good for Safaricom. Just to wrap it up, yes. Why were we talking about the war in Ethiopia? Because
Safaricom,
yeah. Everything that is happening in Ethiopia will cool down so that we can have economic expansion.
Yes.
Yeah.
Something that I was following up closely from both a business point of view and a civic education point of view is that the Health Amendment Bill of 2021, which is the bill that was I think assented by regulators that seeks to control hospital and doctors' charges, and I was looking at a draft copy here with me. And the rationale for the bill was, it's just another effort to sort of democratize access to healthcare. And before we actually get to the debating whether and to what extent is it necessary to limit the charges for doctors' fees, here's the rationale. Yeah. First of all, the bill is looking to sort of making it an offense for public health facilities to demand advance payments of medical fees as a precondition to provide medical services. Okay. Two, the bill also seeks to amend the Principal Act to provide that it shall be an offence for a person in charge of a public health facility to detain the body of a deceased person as a means of enforcing settlement outside medical bills. Also, lastly, the bill also seeks to amend the Principal Act to provide for the regulation of levying of charges for the practice of conventional medicine, essentially away from this legalese, which I do not like in how most Kenyan bills are written, because I feel like they unnecessarily bar the common Wanjiku. What the legislators are looking to do is to make it easier, especially for Kenyans to access health services when they do not have money. Also access their loved ones or people who pass away in case they do not have money. And I think something that really, really caught my attention is that the bill wants to make it a crime for hospitals to demand down payment before providing emergency services. And the Ministry of Health is looking to extend that specific clause to private hospitals. Felix, my question is, do you think medical services should be part of the list of essential services that the government can regulate when it comes to pricing? Context. Kenya is heavily underinsured. NHIF penetration is like what? I think around maybe 17.9%. Private insurance is around 1.2%. So the rest are just living on vibes and inshallah.
We're actually living on a point of, when I'm sick, I'll see what I'll do.
Exactly.
Yeah, watch out, Nikuwe Mgonja, and then we see what we have to do. But then, remember that there's been a lot of data, Ali. I think earlier on, for the first half of 2021, there was data that about, there was a huge number in millions actually,
mm-hmm.
of Kenyans that stopped paying the NHIF, the payments for the NHIF immediately after they lost their jobs last year. That was true throughout last year.
Mm-hmm.
And we're seeing that really as a major challenge for me. If the government is really coming in and putting in these restrictions on, pricing this bit, it's a good thing. The main challenge is, the facilities. We're likely going to see places where hospitals are going to have, because of this standardization, we're going to see where the quote-unquote good hospitals are going to, not really quote-unquote, say they're good hospitals, they're hospitals that don't have the right
mm-hmm.
the right facilities, to handle certain types of conditions. We're going to see places where the bad hospitals won't have any facility, any patients. And the moment that happens, there's a high possibility that they will not have fair access,
Mm-hmm.
And that is where we're going to see also massive corruption really come in, where guys would actually be told, you'd need to pay something to have your patient looked onto. Haraka. But that's just on a light note, guys. It's a good thing to have, guys. Remember that a lot of data always says that, we are always just an illness away from poverty.
Mm-hmm.
And we're seeing that really happening. So really good for me to see the government come into this space. But I think the main thing that the government should be focusing on really is not about how much a hospital is charging for any amount, but the basic thing should really be on to really the quality of healthcare across all, mostly public facilities within the country.
Mm-hmm.
Because Ali, if you look at some of these facilities, and let me give you guys a very vivid example, is I have gone to two public facilities. I have gone to, I don't go private a lot of the times, but I just tell you guys, I have gone to my home county, that is Homa Bay District Hospital. It's level 4 hospital. And I've also gone to Bagathi as well.
Mm-hmm.
And you literally note there's a huge difference in that space. Well, while Bagathi is a notch higher, And we cannot really compare that. But even if you go to Murang'a level 4 hospital, it's pretty much better. So the county governments should actually look, the national government in line with the county government should look more on working ways in which the level of treatment within these facilities could be improved. We're having other hospitals like, and going a little bit into the local data, guys, to digress off the topic, but now since this is health and medical, we have to be honest here. We're going to see a lot of hospitals really being overwhelmed, because even right now, Ali, a lot of guys, even during this COVID period, a lot of guys want to take their kins to the private hospitals, not because of the funds, but because of the higher chances that their kin is likely to, you know, come out alive and they're going to see them again. The only challenging thing, which I think is really a challenge and it's a bad thing for hospitals to do,
mm-hmm.
is to hold a body. Come on, who does that? You're holding a body as a prisoner. I think that's something that's so evil. Yeah, for that, I think, and the law actually says the body belongs to the government. So I don't know why hospitals usually claim the body.
I think it's just...
Yeah, because in the end, if these guys don't stop claiming the body, the hospital has the right to request the government for the disposal of those bodies.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Felix, you know what? I wish to digress. I feel like for most hospitals in Kenya, the quality of services is decent. And I use the word decent here very, very charitably to imply that, you know what? You get in and your ailment will be treated in a fairly reasonable time. Okay? But then I feel like the challenge that's forcing hospitals to go towards an ethical extent, such as A, holding a body, B, demanding upfront service, upfront payment for
it's because for of emergency the habits services. Of Kenyans.
No. Actually, please don't quote Major Tabia as our Kenya. We're not. No. But I think it's because there are very little guarantees of payment, either because people won't pay or because people can't pay. Which brings us to the problem here. Can't pay, won't pay. And that problem, I think, could be better solved by just improving access to insurance. Because, Felix, I'm not going to let you go on. But as a country, health insurance is at what? Under 20%.
Actually, very low.
That's threatening, dear.
You know, Ali, I think one of the things that we need to do, and guys, maybe you guys can, you know, get into the HISA app and give us your feedbacks on this podcast or on this discussion for NHIF, but or generally for the health sector. Ali, my major concern is the public education that we have on even NHIF alone is very low. I don't know about you or how often you've probably seen an ad out there for NHIF or you've seen guys, you know, talk about NHIF or something else.
It's a chicken and egg story. Well, low public. Here's the thing, yeah? I mean...
Chicken and egg story. Which came first?
Well, no. I'm looking at chicken and egg in the sense of they provide poor services.
Yeah.
NHIF really doesn't provide the best services.
No, I think...
Decent services, at least.
NHIF does. As long as the hospital lodges that claim in time, NHIF would...
Let me tell you why I'm arguing it's not. Here's
but,
the thing.
But they don't pay the whole amount.
There's this mobility clause. A few years ago, you could only be treated, especially for outpatient, in a hospital that you've registered in. Last I interacted with NHIF, I know they changed that to allow you to alter the hospital that you can access services with. I think you can change that every month. But then this whole idea of tying your sickness and your need for medical services to a specific geographic location is just outrageous.
It's crazy. I mean, Ali, you're here in Nairobi and you go home somewhere in Lamu.
No, forget then, Lamu. Kiambu.
Yeah, you're here in Nairobi and you go to Kiambu and all of a sudden you're like...
I can't access outpatient because I'm not... it's outrageous.
Guys, we should
and
stop some
things like that are a problem. And you know, apart from that, it's what can you actually access with NHIF? Trust me, go to a private hospital that's within that's registered for you to access outpatient, and with the cover, you can access the most basic of drugs. just the basic ones.
You're feeling
so
ill.
So why would I rely on a national insurance service, that a national insurance that's just going to give me a painkiller?
But then also, you know, even for the local insurance companies, it's time that we as a country really had a bit of certain level of discussion, you know, for the insurance sector. Looking at it from the medical bit, you know, the old model insurance business, even the way we're looking at the current insurance companies. An example is CIC has MBima, a small mobile platform, and not endorsing CIC, guys, a disclaimer, and this is purely for explanatory purposes. But a lot of guys, you know, where they give guys, and even Safaricom had partnered with an insurance company to provide guys with MTBA, right? And we're seeing, I don't know the level of uptake. Yes, it's good and we're seeing that, but still it needs a lot of people. I'm looking at insurance from where an old lady somewhere in the village, you know, somebody who's never really had even a smartphone, can be able to go into a hospital. They have their ID card. They go into a hospital and they can be able to access free, fair, and stable, and affordable and comfortable medical cover. That is when we know that we will be insured, because otherwise, if we depend on this, it will be a challenge. And also, we're growing up with a new kind of a millennial that is really into saving but not into insurance. It's a very bad habit.
What are some of the incentives that would allow... what do you think are some of the incentives that would encourage, especially young people, I'm talking about people my age, to take up insurance?
Okay, how about my age?
Fine, let's go with your age. You're older, in case our listeners do know.
I am days older than Ali, guys. So now, I think there's a lot.
Over 700 days, just to clarify.
Jesus, that's so specific. All right, so I think, Ali, one of the things that we're seeing a lot of guys, and we really need to move up, is, you know, there's a way that local insurance companies, and also for, okay, let's not blame insurance companies.
Okay.
Let's blame the system, man. We have a very poor level of financial literacy in the country. And some of the things about financial literacy is emergency funding.
Mm-hmm.
And the bit of developing an emergency fund, the insurance scheme, the insurance you have is literally a mini emergency fund that people don't really know about. Where if you have, if you're sick and you have any issue, then the first thing that you really do is, you know, it's literally pulling up on that insurance.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
Guys don't know that, yes, you can be saving it. You can save a million today. But then if you need a surgery in India and you need to raise a million shillings, where's the first bit you're going to hit it? Your account, right? So that's a major challenge. Those are things that I think we can be able to do, things that we can be able to work on, to generally ensure that for us as a people, you know, we deliver a lot. Ali, back to you.
But you know what, on the financial education bit, if insurers take up this challenge to educate people on the importance of insurance, period, and say some specific subcategories like health insurance, they're still the ones to benefit in. Okay, it's a mutual benefit. The people get to have healthier financial habits and they get to have more customers as a sector.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, but also remember that most of our insurance companies are always looking at other companies as well, because of the reality is that it's very hard to depend on the retail market, Ali. And it's a major challenge. You can't depend on retailers because, you know, Ali, you have money today, you pay your NHIF on 1st of September. The next time you have your money on 15th of September, that's when you want to pay. Yet the company really has to rely on this mostly to make investment strategies as well. Because one of the things that people don't know is that insurance companies, what they do and how they make money, guys, is yes, they collect a pool of funds. But at the same time, they also invest some of these funds in certain assets as well.
Well, we'll have to get someone from insurance in the next show.
Absolutely.
But before we do that, another South African giant is pulling out of Kenya.
Ooh.
You guys remember Shoprite left the group.
Yeah.
I guess Game is following. So in the middle of the week, Massmart the retailer that operates game stores in East and West Africa, announced that the company has already begun the formal process to divest in 5 game stores in Nigeria. Well, 5 game stores in Nigeria, 4 in Ghana, 3 in Kenya, 1 in Uganda, and one in Tanzania. And the reason, the official reason, or the paper reason that the CEO gave is that they want to focus on quote-unquote cost strengths of the company, and that they've sort of reached to a point where the performance and complexity of the stores in East and West Africa are something that they need to address. Felix, what do you think the problem is here? This is not the first South African store that's coming into Kenya and it's pulling up.
Can we just say that Kenya is not really the good business that South Africa thinks it is? Because we've seen South African companies. First of all, it was the retailer from Botswana, that's Chopis.
Mm-hmm.
Chopis actually exited.
And Chopis went heavy on branches here.
Damn, so bad. It was way, 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 way down. And I think that's a major challenge that we're actually hoping that that would become. We actually hope that that would have become a little bit of an interesting bit.
Mm-hmm.
And you've seen how all of a sudden, Massmart has actually, that Massmart, that is the company that owns game stores, not GameStop, the Wall Street Bets. Yeah, it's a very interesting challenge.
Mm-hmm.
But now we're seeing this really coming in as a major challenge, because what was the other company that also left as well?
So we've had Shoppers from Botswana, Shoprite, what?
Woolworths.
Let's check who was still around. Or maybe I stay in Posh Nairobi, I don't know.
Oh, man.
But here's the thing, yeah? Shoppers pulled out, Shoprite pulled out, and now the game. I hope Carrefour stays. Carrefour seems to be doing good.
Come on, Alpha Time is doing very good.
Plus, they have the money to splash.
And then it's not South African.
something that in the discussions that I've had within my private circle, something that I've had is that I guess some retailers, or that this is the unofficial claim, some retailers argue that most South African businesses come to Kenya expecting sort of the same consumer behavior. So the difference in consumer behavior between local consumers and regional consumers is what gets to really, really slap these retailers on the face. And eventually, things do not necessarily work for them.
Or maybe can we say that the locals, the local investment space is not really good for the South African market.
Mm-hmm.
When they're coming in, because it's not only the supermarket chains, the retailers, Ali, but apart from Standard Bank South Africa and Absa Bank, apart from the banking sector, we've also seen other sectors, you know, really come in hit from the South African space. We saw Liberty, that's the company that was behind Fahari. When they came in with the irate idea, they thought it would be the same thing that they do in South Africa, and
did not work.
Business wasn't as they planned to, and it didn't work for them.
Media 24. Yeah, Media 24, a subsidiary of Naspers, also didn't work
and left.
Nando's did not work. Supreme Furniture.
Oh no! It was Shoprite that was leaving.
Shoprite left already.
Yeah, so Shoprite had actually left as well.
Yeah.
So Shoprite is gone. Nando's. Media 24, Supreme Furniture.
My brother, South Africans, maybe you should stick to the South.
Yeah, guys, stick to the South. The North is not for you guys.
But then here's the thing. Let's look at the reverse. How many Kenyan based retailers have we had that have actually expanded beyond Kenya?
Nakumat.
Okay.
That is still there. Yeah, we've had Nakumat going to Uganda and Tanzania.
Nakumat went to Uganda and Tanzania.
Yeah, and then looks like it went all the way to the Pacific and
drowned.
A storm came in. Yeah, so pretty much a good thing and a bad thing. Oh, and we have Uchumi as well. And guys, by the way, I think Uchumi, if you're listening to this and you're looking at investing in a company, if you're a Spark, if you're looking at raising a special funds for special purpose acquisition vehicle and go reverse listing, I think Uchumi is technically a shell company right now.
Shell company?
Yeah, there's nothing. Is there anything that the company is doing? They still have any shop running?
I thought they had something on Gongroad.
Wait. Does Uchumi still have anything?
I do not know. I
think okay, but even if they have something at Gongroad, is it to just keep the dream alive or is it even stocked? You remember the Aga Khan Walk store that was there for ages and ages?
Yeah.
And there are times you'd go in and there was literally nothing.
No, they had water. Give them
they bread. Had water and bread. But I think it's also because there was a lot of guys used to sit on the opposite side. So guys would buy bread and water.
Like in the days of John the Baptist.
No comment, guys. I do not want to quote the Bible.
I don't know. It's the Kenyan retail market is dicey, and then you look at Quick Mart and Naivas going heavy on expansion. Naivas just opened the branch in Prestige earlier.
Quick Mart is too quick. They're opening everywhere. They're behind my house, literally.
But then, like, whenever I see this happen, you know, I have the ghosts of Nakumat past sort of creep up on me. And it's like, guys, we've seen this before. We've seen two other stores that also expanded very, very fast. And it didn't work out for them because, well, the costs became outrageous and the debt was also unsustainable.
Well, I think, Ali, maybe the one thing that most guys are not looking at is the challenge with companies like Nakumat is that they relied on debt heavily for the expansion bit. Where now they were, you know, relying heavily. And you're seeing companies like Amana Capital, companies like Diamond Trust Bank have said where they had losses, huge losses, close to in 50s, you know, 50 million and stuff like that. They had challenges in that bit just before they could, you know, just before Nakumat went under. But we're seeing Naivas as an example where they're getting, and even Quickmart, these are companies that are now relying more on funding.
Mm-hmm.
And so pretty much of a different thing. So let's see, let's just see where it might go.
Yeah.
But let's really hope that Quickmart would come and, you know, pick up from where Nakumat or Tusky's left.
Highly unlikely, given the, you know, I'm looking at Quickmart identifies itself as a convenience store, not a supermarket.
Not a supermarket.
So
a lot of guys need to get to understand that.
I know, they
have said that because a lot of guys have asked why your price is higher. You find bread is 5 shillings higher, and some things are as high as 20 shillings higher. Guys would complain online and tell guys, you know what. Why is this?
Because we are a convenience store. And we're just trying to bring goods closer to you and get the.
So you're paying for the convenience.
You're paying for the convenience. But then here's the thing, Felix, yeah? For me, you cannot, like, I'm yet to see any retailer actually match up the Nakumat. Variety of goods
variety, that Nakumat service,
my god, quality, the variety
all under one roof.
And then of course Quickmart will never match by the sheer fact that they're more expensive. So I can't speak for other retailers, but personally I cannot do my monthly shopping at Quickmart.
Are you anti-Quickmart?
I am not anti-Quickmart. Let's just say that my shopping is not an expensive quickie. I am open to going to other stores that offer cheaper services. I would happily walk into a Naivas or a Carrefour for select goods also, depending on what's on offer. Quickmart is me walking in the middle of Nairobi and realize that I actually need apple juice and that's it.
Quickmart has some huge backing.
I don't know. Moving on, I think something that we can also look at today before we move towards what's happening regionally is the August inflation. And and Kenyans, as usual.
Paying for things higher than they're supposed to, than they paid for the previous month.
Yes. So to the guys who prefer to have a really, really good Friday night, I'm sorry. Last month, we saw that the cost of, good food and non-alcoholic beverages rose by 10.67%. The cost of housing, water, electricity, gas, and other fuels rose by 5.07%. And the cost of transport rose by 7.93%. I'm actually curious to see how September inflation numbers will look like, given that if you observe different routes, especially in Nairobi, we've seen that matatus have started charging less now that they're carrying full capacity. So, for example, my I think rush hour commute is around 20 bob less expensive.
How much are you paying previously?
Mostly it was 100 bob.
But now you're paying 80.
It's 80, and once it gets to 10 a.m., 60. Again, that's from a public transport point of view. We've seen that most matatus have slightly slashed their fares. So I'm curious to see how the numbers for September would look like. But then looking at specific categories of food, we saw that the prices of cabbages, spinach, oranges are the ones that rose the most, which is by 3.74%, 3.06% for spinach, and 2.44% for oranges. I haven't eaten oranges in like 10 years. I don't know. So this one is not going to impact me.
Where do you get your vitamin C?
I think... Okay. Do avocados count?
Okay, let's just proceed.
Okay. Yeah. But then again, this is just, it's something that we expected, because we've seen that inflation numbers have been really, really, really climbing month on month since, I think they've been doing that for almost the whole year, Felix. Because last month...
Can we just say from 2019, the inflation has been up and up and up and up?
Yeah. I guess we could. I think on the good side, we've seen that the private sector activity improved this month. We saw that the Kenya's private sector activity grew for the fourth month in a row at a slightly faster pace in August, actually, thanks to increased demand and hiring. And we saw that the PMI rose to 51.1% in the month of August, up from 50.6%, which is mostly a testament of how business recovery has accelerated, especially in the past month. And mostly it's because we've seen increased demand in virtually every other sector except manufacturing, and that has largely been driven by sort of more orders, more exports to the Middle East and Europe. But I think the manufacturing sector is still sort of struggling with meeting that demand and dealing with the backlog that it had. Felix, let's look at Africa. And our nice sister country down there, Tanzania. What do you think of the regulation of the cutting down of the 30% levy on mobile charges?
I think, Adli, first of all, this is definitely a relief for investors and also for guys. Generally, for the general public, Look at this as an incentive the government is making, to put in a lot in terms of also expand the growth in mobile money penetration, And this is a bold move that I think the government is really doing, because remember that in June this year, the government had told the Electronic and Postal Corporation, the legislature, to amend the Electronic and Postal Communications Act in Tanzania. That is to impose a levy of between 10 Tanzanian shillings and 10,000 Tanzanian shillings on mobile money transactions, depending on the amount sent or withdrawn. And this was pretty high, and they saw that it was a move for the company to, you know, bring it down. And so this is pretty much of a challenge for this. So I think it's more of an incentive to tell citizens that, you know what, we listen and we care.
True. I feel like, again, it's more of in line with what they said earlier and then acted against, just simply pushing for that financial inclusion. Because, I mean, the country said that they want to sort of expand the number of participants in digital finance, but then again, increasing or rather reviewing mobile money transaction charges up is really, really counterintuitive. So I guess, yeah, this definitely is good news. Do we have any recent reviews when it comes to a mobile money, or rather levies on mobile money in Kenya?
I think we did so.
When was that? Because I haven't been transacting with M-Pesa long enough, honestly.
Remember that when reintroducing the charges for the mobile money transaction, Safaricom took the bold move and reduced their charges per transaction.
Oh yeah, they cut them down.
Yeah.
I honestly missed that. Speaking of, I think last week when we had wind that the charges between mobile money wallets and bank accounts are coming back.
Yeah.
Did you hear anything from that, Felix, Nicole?
I think banks have been planning to do that for a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
A few banks like Cooperative Bank of Kenya have actually released, I had to call Cooperative Bank. Yeah. Cooperative Bank of Kenya has actually reintroduced some of this.
Oh, they've reintroduced some?
Yeah, come on, yeah. But I know also for the same time a few banks for example Equity, okay, other banks apart from Coop Bank have actually reintroduced this. If your bank has introduced this, let me know. But for me, the only bank I transact with, which is Coop Bank, has reintroduced that. My other bank is yet to introduce it, so I have moved all my transactions to the other bank. Who care, because it's a pandemic time. Yeah, but come on, guys, that's serious on a light note. But I've seen Coop Bank reintroduce the transaction charge, and we've seen other banks likely to move into that space as well.
I think this would make a really, really nice conversation for bulls and bears and markets. I would love to review the transaction charges for mobile money wallets across the world. Because one argument that we've had with Eric Jackson, the CTO here, is that sometimes charging heavily on mobile money is actually just sort of impeding or rather taking advantage of the improved velocity of money. And that shouldn't be the case, given that we've seen that transfers, especially on cryptocurrency like Bitcoin, Felix, I'm sure you'd be able to confirm this, cost significantly less. So maybe I feel like there's still an opportunity for mobile money service providers to review down the charges, given that the incremental cost when it comes to either an increase in the amount of money transacted or an increase in the number of users transacting isn't that big. But then that's something that we'd really, really love to break down for you at the Bulls, Bears and Markets.
Whiskey.
Bulls, Bears and Whiskey, as Felix calls it. I think maybe looking at things globally, Felix, Apple has been that one company that I've been really, really looking out for. And this is because of two things this week. First of all, Apple was supposed to introduce a feature that would scan the phone or iPhones and Apple Cloud to protect children from predators. So it would essentially scan a user's photo library for images of child exploitation. And while this is an announcement that came somewhere in the middle of this year, the company earlier today announced that it will delay that plan. And the announcement came with a slight dip in share price, and this is simply because people are saying that, you know, scanning images stored on an iCloud account is actually a breach of the customer's privacy. So in as much as the thought behind it is noble, but then scanning individual images on an iCloud account, Jesus, I should get an iPhone and
Ali,
mispronouncing these things.
Please get a fruit phone.
I know, right?
Yeah.
Samsung, I'm moving away from you very soon. But then scanning the images on an iCloud account is against privacy. What do you think, Felix?
I think for a very long time, Ali, you know, a lot of guys have been to fruit phones because fruit phones have protected their privacy.
But then the fruit phones want to scan images.
But I think, you know, it goes against some of the company values, but we have to be human to some extent. We've seen a lot of issues about children rights violation,
mm-hmm.
and child abuse.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it would be modest if the company, you know, got in a way to figure out that so that guys can be able to deliver. An example is if, and guys, I know if you probably followed news about Apple, you'd know that the FBI was unable to actually crack into a phone for certain suspects because iPhone said it's a company policy not to have that. And we've actually even seen that in Kenya where the Kenyan security agencies have even sent
requests,
and the company said, no, we're not doing that. But I think when it comes to cases where children are involved, it's cases where children have sexual abuse, children doing war as well, and children being, you know, abused in any form, any kind of manner. I would go that way. I won't look at that. Because if you have a kid and somebody is having any issue with them, if somebody is beating up your kid, and yet those voices or that picture has probably been saved somewhere on an iPhone, what the hell? Let guys access that. Let the law enforcement agencies. And remember, this is purely scanning for them and selecting them and probably forwarding them to law enforcement agencies. So guys might probably move back to Android.
You know, let me clarify that. Apple says that it's actually not planning to quote unquote scan the user's photos. What it will do is more of look for non-digital fingerprints and run it against their database. And then if sort of the system detects enough images on one user's account, then it's going to flag it and channel it to a human monitor to confirm the imagery and pass the information to law enforcement if necessary.
Can we say like it's the edge of the AI?
AI reporting human beings, sure.
Yeah, it looks like the bots are taking over.
The fruit bots.
Yeah, and remember that Elon said that he's also building a humanoid.
Wait, I think he built this already, the one that was seen dancing on the internet a few days ago.
Yeah.
I have to say that thing looked sick, man. It's not what I expected on a robot. But then moving away from Elon, I know you love the guy, and I'm afraid of letting you continue because I feel like you'd start worshipping Almighty Elon. Apple also launched a virtual driver's license. And here's the thing, Felix. Let me explain first of all what this is. So Apple has partnered with 8 states in the United States to launch a digital driver's license for its devices, that is the iPhone and the Apple Watch, because it emphasizes that the new IDs are more secure. And the digital licenses will come out, of course, as the year ends. And it essentially allows you to scan your license on your iPhone at least in the US, and same way you'd scan a card on Apple Pay, and you can take a selfie, and then the selfie is going to be taken up for verification. You can essentially go through security by tapping your iPhone or Apple Watch and scanning either your fingerprint or your face. And they're actually looking to sort of engage the police to accepting the use of, you know, the buyers through the Apple IDs on traffic stops.
And are guys going to buy this again?
Pardon?
What is there for Apple to gain? Are guys going to buy other extra devices? You know, Apple is the only place where it's the only company where any other thing that comes with the phone you have to buy.
No, this one is just gonna come with the iOS update.
Any other thing that we need to have, will we pay for that?
Unless, Felix, you're not in the 8 states in the United States because you're not in the United States, so chill.
Oh my god, guys. I quit. I honestly quit today's discussion on that page.
Felix from Mushada, chill.
I am done.
You need to wait a couple of years.
I think that's a personal man. Tell that.
I think my actually, I found this interesting because it signifies the greater push towards, you know, digital IDs. Because again, the Apple Wallet, apart from paying for things inside stores, it's just like M-Pesa. You can pay for commute, you can pay for concerts, you can pay for health insurance. And the Apple Wallet is actually now used to unlock keys and actually access some buildings. So later they're actually looking to scale that to access homes, hotel rooms, and offices.
For Nairobi.
I mean, this feature is going to start in the US. And here's the thing.
We will definitely be waiting for that feature for Nairobi.
That's going to be deadly in Nairobi. Think about it this way. I steal your phone. Okay, it has fingerprint and bio, but then in any other scenario, I steal your phone and then I can access your house. Hey, you there. First of all, you know, those people who have, quote-unquote, possessive partners, seem to me.
Anyway, we do not want to be part of that discussion.
We single people are just going to move on. So that was...
TMI.
Hey, in case the listener out there hears and, you know. Anyway.
That's it. But then Ali also, just to give guys a little bit of a brief of one thing as well that's really happening,
mm-hmm.
is that Chinese hailing app Didi Inc., I know you know the story about Didi.
You're right.
You remember that?
Mm-hmm.
Is that the government is taking over Didi. I think they collected too much data from China.
No way.
That now the government is seeking to take over the operations of Didi. And that news alone has seen the shares for Didi jump about 14% in trading.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's a really important thing that we're seeing a lot of guys really happening too. Remember that currently Didi is under review by the Chinese Cyberspace Security Administration. Jesus, yeah, Cyberspace Administration of China. Let me call it that. That is because of Didi illegally collecting user data. And now remember that earlier on, Didi was actually asked to stop signing up new users, and the app was also removed from the various app stores within China. And now we're seeing that bit after Didi came in and raised a little bit of funding, actually not a little bit, $4 billion in terms of funding for the company. The company was suspended. I think they finished the IPO on a Friday, on a Monday, and on Thursday, the Chinese authority came in and, you know, hit them rolling. So it's pretty much of a challenge that we're actually seeing in here. But we're seeing even on Friday, today, in terms of trading, we're seeing Didi is already up 6% in terms of trading. So checking that again, for the latest update that is available on Hisa app, we're seeing Didi is up currently at about 6% per share.
I think something else, and I think this will be it for me, Felix. I don't know about you. Something else that that got my attention is Zoom. And remember how in the middle of the pandemic we were all excited that, you know what, Zoom's revenue is growing, that the stock is growing very fast because we're moving towards the age of working from home and guys embracing digital conferencing as the new norm. Well, it's quarterly revenues for Zoom grew 54% from last year. But then again, that's almost 200% slower than the previous quarter. And the company is expecting even slower growth in the next quarter. How do you think Zoom is going to fare with the developments in the vaccine? Because here's the thing, yeah, in as much as COVID-19 is coming out with new versions faster than the iPhone, the vaccine is right behind it, and we've seen more countries open up. Of course, we've had select cases where countries are locking down again, but then guys are more open and more receptive to go to the office right now. What do you think Zoom mean for guys like Zoom? And how can they, you know, rebump the growth?
You can Zoom in and you could also Zoom out, right?
Zoom is clearly zooming out.
Yeah, so Zoom is zooming out. But and also another thing that guys have really put on, and this is what Zoom has actually said, is that Zoom is not only just a video platform,
mm-hmm.
but it's really, really doing a lot in terms of, you know, other modes of engagement. And also remember that, Ali, as much as COVID is coming up with newer versions every day, every few weeks or few months, we hear of a deadly version of COVID. And remember that right now, we've seen a few countries that were fully vaccinated or had completed their rollout for COVID vaccine. We've been seeing in the US, guys are now being advised to go for another second shot. Third shots, not second, but third. And we don't know if there'll be a fourth one or something like that. So it's pretty much of a challenge for now. I think Zoom is still going to be here. The company needs to be a little bit even innovative, because we've seen them even get and actually partner and acquire certain companies. They acquired a cloud-based storage company.
Five9?
Yeah, Five9. Pretty much interesting. Let's see where this goes for the company. But I think it's headed for a longer play. It's not only from the point of Zoom being just in one way. And yeah.
Well, I feel like here's the thing. If Zoom is going to play the long game, especially when it comes to, like, forget revenue, if we're looking at growth, Zoom is going to have to follow up on some of its earlier plans. So, for example, earlier Zoom announced that it actually plans to license its video conferencing services to other applications. So, think of a video call feature. I know Tinder already has a video call feature. Do not ask me how I know.
Oh.
But think of, you know, a dating app using Zoom teleconferencing tech, and then they get to pay licensing fees, but it doesn't come with the branding. Think of a health tech riding on Zoom video conferencing tools to reach more clients. I think that could be like a lucrative B2B channel, because I feel like Zoom experienced enough growth for a couple of years, and I am not entirely sure we're going to see this growth anytime soon. At least that's how I feel.
Well, Ali, I think another thing is that Zoom has actually said that they're putting in a lot in terms of bolstering the ecosystem for the company, and now they're actually funding various investments that they can be able to build into their portfolio.
Mm-hmm.
So, because even the company knows very well that they cannot rely purely on live video streaming. but there's a lot that the company is really working on to just move into this. The company is partnering with a few companies like BrightHire, Docket, Fathom, Hive, Poly, Spinach. If you hate Spinach, guys, there's a company called Spinach. Yeah, so yeah, Warmly and also Work Patterns. So they're focusing in a lot of ways, and looks like this might be the new thing that we have. The main concern is that if Zoom wasn't really too good, then why would other companies be involved in it?
No,
we've seen Google actually ramp up its support, its activities on video conferencing, and we've also seen that as well for other companies like Microsoft. So pretty much of a good thing, but also a little bit of let's see who's going to win out in this game.
Yeah, thing is, my concern was that Zoom has been big for work meetings.
Yeah.
It's going to have to grow past that.
Yeah, and I think the partnership that they've seen, and this was 4 days ago when the company announced that they were doing more funding in terms of, you know, investing in other micro companies that they think can be able to, you know, form part of their larger entity.
Mm-hmm.
So we're looking at Zoom really becoming more of a large ecosystem than what it currently is.
Yeah. Felix, as we close the podcast, again to our listeners, this podcast and many others hosted on the Kenyan Wall Street are brought to you by Hisa, the newest, most amazing app to access market data both locally and globally, and currently beta testing access to global markets, specifically US markets, where you get to buy stock of companies that we've discussed on this show, like Zoom, amongst many others. And what do we have happening there on Hisa before we close, Felix?
For the guys on Hisa, I think earlier this week, just as we mentioned when we were starting this show, is we let a few guys into our internal beta testing. Can we say like it's no longer internal because it's more of a public beta, but
right.
we accepted a few guys. Our next batch will probably be about 500 guys, which is supposed to be coming in, I guess, within the next, you know, within the next probably like 1 week or so, we'll probably be accepting more, 500 more guys into the internal program. And this is an opportunity where you're being given a portfolio and you can be able to trade, you know, and give us feedback on the beta of buying more stocks, both for the local, for the global markets, mostly for investors who looking at this from a US market perspective. So for the start, we're going to be US stocks, and we're also going to be giving you guys, we'll be working hard to give you guys access to a lot of other products as well. So that's it for us. But also, in case you've never downloaded Hisa, it's a very cool app. You can be able to get access to the local market, listen to podcasts like this one that you're listening to right now. The recorded version of this podcast will definitely be up on the Hisa app. And also you get to have a lot in terms of interacting with other fellow guys. There's a community there where investors, everybody's there, and they're telling you about their thoughts. What is it that they want to invest in? And what is it that you can be able to probably invest in? You're free as well. You can share your ideas as well on the app. As long as it's not anything that is personal, we definitely accept it on the platform. If it's business related, it's always open for Hisa.
Definitely. And guys, before we wrap up the podcast, remember in the last episode of We Are Curious, I was really keen to interview Vice Ventures with regards to what's happening around OnlyFans, you know, backing it up a little bit on the type of content that they'd like to wear. Flex update, that interview is coming out later this month. So stay tuned for an interview with Catherine Dockery, the founder of Vice Ventures, on essentially what the opportunity when it comes to Vice companies. And here we're looking at companies in the cannabis sector, companies in sex tech, companies in the tobacco. Yes, I said it. So if you're excited for unconventional investments, stay tuned. That's all we had for today's podcast.
Thanks a lot, guys. We really loved your company, and see you guys again on Monday as we talk about Markets Monday, and on Wednesday as we talk about trending stuff, we'll definitely be looking at the Bulls, Bears and Whiskey event. Thank you all and have a wonderful evening. Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.